The most important time of a Mormon kid's life is his mission. A chance to go out and help heal the world, that's my mission. Soon I'll be off in a different place, helping the whole human race. I know my mission will be something incredible.
This is Matt from Infants on Thrones. And in that one lyric from the Book of Mormon musical, Matt and Trey Parker summed up the feelings most Mormons have about missions. It's described as the two best years when they'll be called to serve to be part of God's army in the hollow of his hand. Recently, the Mormon Church made an announcement that for Mormons was probably the biggest news since caffeine-free Dr. Pepper. The church decided to change the age of male missionaries from 19 to 18, and the female missionaries from 21 to 19. The reason for this change is kind of like the reason for doing genealogy. It's not very clear to me. Regardless of the reason, the change in age will reportedly dramatically increase the number of clear-eyed, white-shirted door knockers around the world. Back in 2007, I started a different Mormon-themed podcast, Mormon Mission Stories. I started it because I was struggling with my faith, and I saw mission stories as a way to keep me positively tied to a religion I was feeling distant from. A good friend and a faithful member was my partner. After just a handful of interviews, it became clear that we had what could be called creative differences. He viewed it as a way to tell faith-promoting stories. I viewed it as a way to tell the mission stories most people don't get to hear, to show that missions are kind of like a G-rated Animal House, and that missionaries are just some guys out of high school trying to navigate in their world. The podcast ended after only a few short months. Mission stories give some insight into Mormons and the Mormon Church generally, but they do more than that. Missions are a rite of passage for the men and women who choose to go on missions, but particularly for Mormon men. These mission stories often give insight into the individual missionary's personality and help provide understanding for where a person is by looking at where they came from. This insight is often especially significant if that missionary changed their faith or their relationship to the church they sacrificed 2 years for. So I'm reviving my old Mormon mission stories idea now with the help of the other Quorum members from Infants on Thrones to hopefully learn a little something about missions and the missionary.
This is Infants on Thrones, the philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Since we're reviving this Mormon mission stories idea, I figured what better way to start than an interview with one of our fellow Infants on Thrones Quorum members. This is Bob.
I'm Bob. Bob Caswell.
And he's one of the voices you can hear regularly on Infants on Thrones. Bob could probably be considered as one of the infants who are less than an a-hole, at least compared to some of the other ones.
Sure.
But before he was one of the infants, he was a Mormon. And Glenn and I sat down to talk to Bob about his mission experience. We also asked him about life before his mission. Bob told us that his mission was the first time he lived somewhere without his family, and was asked about his most significant life experience before the mission.
I really don't have a good answer, because before my mission, not that much significant stuff happened. I mean, I grew up a typical kid in the church. Certain things weren't as typical. With the first 10 years of my life, I lived overseas, because my dad worked for the government. But I was always very closely knit with my family unit, my family structure. I never had persistent friends for a long time because we moved around so much until I lived in Utah from about age 12-ish to when I went on my mission. I have one story where I had a good friend in high school, and we went on a road trip to Idaho. You know, I am living in Utah, and ooh, let's go to Idaho, you know, a couple states over, up or whatever. And I did it without my parents' permission, and we just went to Idaho for a weekend, the two of us. And I thought I was being so rebellious. I mean, part of the trip was stopping over at this place called Big Judd's, which had like a huge one-pan hamburger challenge. I thought that was so cool. And then we just drove around Idaho. I don't even remember everything we did because we didn't do anything other than just not getting our parents' permission. But then come to find out, when I came home, my dad stopped me and he's like, "Hey, I haven't seen you in a while. Were you out last night?" Like, he didn't even notice My parents didn't like get concerned or know that I was gone for a couple of days, just because we were six kids. I mean, not to say my family wasn't caring and loving and that sort of thing. They were, but there's just always a lot going on. We all had our own activities. We were all pretty sheltered. We were all pretty well groomed and raised in such ways that our parents just thought we were always doing the right thing. So yeah, I mean, I was rebellious and I wasn't rebellious at the same time. There's a story for you that's going to put people to sleep.
Rebellious light.
Yeah.
All right, drum roll. Where were you called?
I was called to the Sofia, Bulgaria mission.
Sofia, yeah. Bulgaria?
Bulgarian speaking.
What was your reaction to that, Bob?
I was excited. I wasn't that surprised, but I was excited nonetheless.
Why weren't you surprised?
So my mom is originally from Bulgaria. My sister at the time was serving a mission in Bulgaria. And my grandfather was the first mission president to serve in Bulgaria when they first opened up the country for missionary work for Mormons back in 1990-ish time frame. So here I am in 1998 with all these connections. My sister's already there. My mom is Bulgarian. In fact, she trains the missionaries at the missionary training center where I would report for the first couple of months. And my grandfather had already been the president there for a couple of years when the country first opened for Mormons. But yeah. Normally, your family is totally removed from the equation and you are out on your own, oftentimes in a foreign country. Not always. Obviously, there are missionaries in the U.S. But if you are in the U.S., you're typically far enough away from your family that you can't get to them in a day or without some trouble. And it's on purpose that way. You're not supposed to have contact with people that are most important to you, as strange as that sounds, because then you can be more focused and work on the actual work that is missionary work. And I don't know if I'm sounding very convincing, because it doesn't sound as convincing as it did at one point in my life, but that's how, that's how it really is. So there was a high probability, I was thinking, that I would get called to Bulgaria. But then there was also a high probability at the same time, there was the other side of my brain that was like, no, they wouldn't do that. I mean, this is supposed to be inspired leaders. And I'm going to go somewhere like crazy unrelated to anything in my life because there's somebody somewhere. You know, I was drawing all sorts of associations trying to tell myself that it wouldn't just be that big of a coincidence.
Most 19-year-old guys are focused on girls and dating. And just because somebody's going on a mission doesn't mean that they forget about those things. So did you have a girlfriend beforehand?
I did. And this may or may not be typical. I was going to say in typical Mormon fashion, but I keep saying that. But it's really just in relation to how I grew up and my friends. I didn't have that many girlfriends. In fact, I really only had one. I had one girlfriend before my mission. And we were a boyfriend-girlfriend in my last year of high school. And we were semi-serious, but that's a whole other story. But it wasn't something that ended up getting in the way of the mission, because she was even more Mormon than I was, in the sense that she sensed, the typical story is you go on a mission and then your girlfriend writes you and then you come home and you marry that girl, or she Dear Johns you somewhere throughout the mission. And for me, she wanted to break it off before I left because she just knew it was more complicated than this. But basically, it was like, rather than wait for you to be gone, I'm just going to tell you now, I'm not waiting 2 years for you, buddy. And that was hard on me. I really was more of a stereotypical, like, in love kind of guy who thought that we'd be like a cute plot of a movie later or something, where she would wait for me and write me every week and we would just be amazing that way and then come back and everything would be like it was. But that's not really how life works, especially when you've only been together for a year.
Bob, are you Facebook friends with her right now?
I am.
All right.
Is that bad? What?
I don't know.
What do you guys okay. So I don't have kids, and she has like four or five kids now. She got married while I was on my mission, so I didn't have a Dear John, but I do remember getting the letter that was like more of a wedding invitation, just FYI, than it was anything other than like It was just basically like, hey, it's been a while. Just want to let you know I'm getting married. Here's a copy of my invitation. You know,
well,
praise the Lord.
Was she writing you at all, though?
Not really. She wrote me a little bit while I was in the MTC, the Missionary Training Center, but she never wrote me once I got out in Bulgaria. So only in the first couple of months.
Never even an unstated, maybe I'll wait for you, maybe things will work out. She really did kind of cut it off and was like, meh, I'm going to move on.
No, yep. not if she sent the letter and let him know that she was getting married. She wanted him to know. She wanted him to know what he was missing out on.
Know that there was no hope.
Maybe, I don't know. She's a nice person, but in retrospect, marrying her probably wasn't a good idea anyway, but yeah. We'll save that for later. But she's, yeah, whatever.
Well, we know that when it comes to girls, boys will be boys. But just because you put a boy on a mission doesn't mean that he isn't still, well, a little gross. I have another really, really close friend that went to Bulgaria, and every time he talks about his mission, he talks about weird hazing or pranks that go on.
One time I first was transferred down to Plovdiv. It was like awesome because I got out of Sofia, which we call the butthole of Bulgaria. So I get transferred down.
I thought that was some gypsy dude called the butthole of Bulgaria.
Oh, no, and it's just because Bulgaria is, I mean, Sofia is like, it was dirty and nasty and stinky and yada yada. So, like, everything that describes a butthole. Well, at least that's mine. A little hairy, maybe. But anyway, we have the...
Oh, my gosh.
So I had all my luggage, everything brought there. And we get all my crap. We get on the train. As soon as we get to Plovdiv, all the guys jump off except me and my companion. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, we'll see you at home. I'm like, dude, thanks for the freaking help with my bags, jerks. And so I'm just like, what the heck's wrong with these dudes, you know? What's the deal? And so my companion's like taking his time, and we get to our building. As soon as I open up the door, my companion sprints in the apartment. I'm like, what the crap's going on? So I'm, like, stuck outside with all my bags. So I'm, like, slowly bringing my crap in. I get it in the door. So I walk in the room, and there's this hallway. Straight down the hall, it opens up into the room, the big room, the family room. And there's the couch. So I walk in. There's freaking two dudes there, completely naked. And they have newspapers holding up, like, guarding their face. Like, they're just reading the newspaper nonchalantly. They're just completely naked. Like, dude, what the crap? So I turn the corner, and there's like four more dudes, completely naked. I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys are freaking jerks. Can't believe this. And so then my new companion, runs out of the bathroom. He had sprinted into the room. He comes running out, and he's naked. I'm like, dude, come on. So I run into I get my bag open, and I grab my camera. I'm like, I'm taking pictures. So they're like, oh, no, no, no. So they all grab pillows, and they're hiding and stuff, covering up. And so, you know, it was a welcoming experience. Yes. To the city. The best thing about my mission were all the other missionaries.
Did that continue on? I think he was there in, like, 96. Did you experience anything like that?
There was some of that. Is that not a typical mission thing? Like, and I talked about it briefly on one of our other podcasts, how I never got this culture. I actually hated it personally, the whole like walking around naked or like playing with your junk or, you know, hanging your balls out of your pants and then goofing off. And this is all not in front of people other than just other fellow missionaries, but just like potty humor kind of.
Maybe in your mission.
Stupid stuff. And whenever missionaries would dick around like this, literally, I would just be like, really, guys, we're supposed to be spiritual giants. We got to go like do a service project after after you finish up playing with yourself there. And it just, I hated it. And it wasn't like a defining characteristic of the mission, but it was here and there. I did notice that kind of behavior and I never liked it.
Yeah, dude, it didn't happen in my mission. We were all very modest and didn't like, nobody just let their junk hang out there. So when I heard about that, I thought it was a little weird. What about you, Glenn?
Well, in my mission, it was just in my first area and it was pretty specific to one missionary who had very strong leadership characteristics, and so there were other people who he kind of roped into streaking. They'd go out streaking at night.
We're going streaking! Yeah!
So the favorite thing to do in our mission was called the credit card. Like, you know, running your hand up somebody's butt crack and then they were credit carded. Like, aha, I just got you. I just credit carded you. And I'd be like, dude, really? Like, can you say the closing prayer now? Like, what's your problem? I never got it. It was.
You never got credit carded? Is that why?
No, I got credit carded all the time, but I never got why this was like happening.
So what? I mean, like, this is as you're walking out of the shower, they're hiding.
No, it's not. Usually not. That would be really disturbing. As if it's like totally okay when you're wearing clothes.
But... Oh, okay. So this was a. I gotcha.
Yeah, it's just a stupid prank people would play on each other.
What do you attribute that? I think that's weird. But what do you attribute that to?
I just attribute it to goofball kids being out on their own. I just thought this was like football team humor stuff because I was never like the sports junkie kind of guy growing up. And I'm like, oh, is this what you guys did in the locker rooms? Because I always rather would, you know, shower alone. So now I know. And that's me just, you know, being judgmental and creating false associations. But maybe football players are the pinnacle of propriety when they're showering and doing things in sports scenarios. But that's kind of what I chalked it up to.
Well, I definitely think it shows you can take the boy out of the world, but you can't take the world out of the boy when he gets there and you get a bunch of guys together. They're going to do – penises are coming out at some point, it seems like. But
Yeah, unfortunately.
So what was the baptism – you baptized a lot of people there?
That's a great segue, by the way.
Yeah. Beautifully done.
Well,
yeah.
It really is, because to see how successful you guys were given all the rampant nakedness and inappropriate behavior.
That's right. You'd think that would stifle missionary work, especially when people are like, oh, my gosh, I got up 5 minutes too late. I slept in. And it's like as if – and I kept bringing this up too, like as if that was something somebody should feel remorseful for, but the credit carding is like no big deal. I never understood
one of the practices on a mission, official practices, is you're supposed to write a letter to the mission president every week. Did you ever write to the mission president about the practice of credit carding?
No, I never did. I was fearful of my own, not safety, but I...
You didn't want to rat people out.
Right, and as much as I want to now characterize myself as some person full of honor or something, it was more like I just wanted people to like me,
so you suffered in silence, man.
Yeah. And
did you ever credit card anybody else from this from this desire to just fit in?
I might have once or twice.
You were peer pressured into credit carding.
I don't know, like I don't remember, but I wouldn't be surprised if in heaven, when God shows me the tapes of my life and the things I've done wrong, if he shows me a clip or two of me like being peer pressured to credit card my fellow missionaries.
Well, that only means that you haven't fully repented of it, so it hasn't been edited from the reel of your life.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so but back to Matt's question, the average baptism rate when I was there was like 1.5, or, you know, it was really low per missionary.
For the entire 2 years?
Yeah, for the entire 2 years. And I had myself two baptisms. And again, Glenn, I felt really good about myself because I was slightly above average.
Yeah.
So.
How did your mission change you, would you say? Did it change you?
Absolutely. It changed me dramatically. I had to confront... I gotta think this through. I had to confront different personalities in a way that I didn't have to deal with when I was living at home. I was very familiar with my family. I knew how things worked. When you're living with somebody constantly, 24/7, and they have a quirky personality, you got to figure out how to deal with them. And I really do think of my mission as my coming of age story, my growth out of childhood, because it's where I first learned how to stand up for myself, how to be nice to others, but not giving in on my own standards, if you will, even if that sounds kind of goofy. And it also was my first awakening into what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, which this also probably sounds a little out there, but Before my mission, when I went to school, I was dabbling with philosophy, engineering. I didn't really know what I want, chemistry, you know, math. I was just taking classes and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And after I had been on my mission for a while, I just really liked working with people, which is, I keep having to throw in these disclaimers like this is just one cheese fest, but, I really enjoyed working more with the Bulgarian people than I did working with the missionaries, just because we didn't have to speak the same language in terms of upbringing and culture. They had more to offer me than I had to offer them, and I maybe didn't recognize it at the time. But just learning new things, meeting new people, having to get out and engage, being forced to do that, it's just stuck with me in a way that I sort of came out of my shell. So ever since, it's just always changed me. So people sometimes, when they find out that I'm not really an active Mormon now, or might ask or have asked, you regret your mission. You could have done so much more in that 2 years. You were 2 years behind. You could have gone to school. You could have done other things. I paid for a lot of it myself. And I don't regret it at all. I wouldn't change it even now, which is, it is what it is.
Well, you also got a wife out of it.
Well, there is that. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't mention that, did we?
We should probably talk about that.
So, yeah, I met my wife on my mission.
Was she a member, or was she investigating?
Neither. When I first met her, she wasn't interested at all.
In the church,
so she's a local. She's Bulgarian.
Yeah.
Not so. You didn't go with like a sister missionary. You ended up.
No. No. No.
Oh, lock your heart, Elder. Lock your heart.
For those of you who don't know, Lock Your Heart's a pretty famous talk that was given by Spencer W. Kimball back in 1968 and continues to be handed out to missionaries throughout the world today. In it, he tells missionaries they have to lock their heart, lock it against all other girls of every description. You lock your heart and leave the key at home, and you never open it here. It's impossible to fall in love with someone unless you open your heart. Your heart is the only organ that has any ability to get into love. Notice he didn't say lust. And when a missionary says, I just fell in love with a girl, well, that's as silly as it can be. Nobody does. Nobody ever did. He continues, lock your hearts and leave the key at home. How can I make it more plain and more important than that? I'd like to, because there is no reason whatever for any missionary to ever become involved, not even in a decent way, with any girl in the mission field. It isn't the place. Every missionary knows that he isn't going out to court, that he isn't going out to find a wife. He's got plenty of opportunity when he gets home, and the mission field isn't the place. So that's some of the content that's at least implied when somebody says, lock your heart.
That's right. That's the first judgment I generally get.
So how did you first meet her?
So one common tactic for missionaries in Bulgaria is to teach English classes.
That's a good con.
Yeah, at community centers or in the various cities, and just say, hey, free English classes, we're Americans. We would say, you know, we are missionaries for this church, and but we do know English, and we'll teach it for free. So she got a hold of one of our flyers or saw it somewhere, and she came in and was interested in just practicing her English, and she thought her English wasn't that good. She wanted to go to the beginner class, and when I first met her, it was at the very beginning of my mission. I was only 4 months in, and my Bulgarian still wasn't very good. Her English was much better than my Bulgarian.
Was there an immediate attraction?
I don't know. I'll have to ask her. Oh, you mean from my side?
Yeah. You're not going to get in trouble for admitting it anymore, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah, that's good to know. But the standard disclaimer, right? We all remember how it was being 19-year-old boys. I was attracted to a lot of women, but my wife included. Yeah, I was definitely attracted to her.
So did you pay her special attention in the English class? I mean, is this where you were going with your story? Did you try to get her to go to your class instead of going to the beginner class?
Well, so she, my class was the intermediate one, and she eventually made her way there because the beginner one was too easy and the advanced one was too hard. So she came to the intermediate one, and we had a good time. There was a few other people in that class, and I taught it, but it was kind of this interesting environment where their Bulgarian wasn't or their English wasn't good enough to communicate with me in English, but my Bulgarian wasn't great and wasn't good enough to communicate with them in Bulgarian. So I have some fun memories of that that couple of months teaching English where we would learn from each other and talk past each other at the same time. It was interesting.
That's like a segment on Love Actually, man. That's so cute.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that's is similar. I liked her as a person, and I was attracted to her, sure. And after I got called away to serve in a different city, she kept going to the English classes, and the missionaries after me stayed with her in terms of trying to get her engaged with the church, like as did I. But she would have none of it when I was pushing it on her.
So you never taught her the discussions or anything?
No, I didn't. No, she wasn't interested.
Were you writing to her after you moved?
Ah, I knew someone would ask that question. Yeah, I broke that rule.
Yeah, okay.
So you're not supposed to write to anyone in your mission.
So you're totally so how many other women did you write to, Bob?
Only my wife.
Okay, so you were totally downplaying this attraction that you felt for her. Why?
Because I didn't know what it was at the time.
But you knew you were interested enough to keep communication with her. You didn't want to be transferred away. You didn't want to lose contact. But you weren't doing that with all of these other many, many, many women that you were attracted to.
Yeah, all these many, many. There are hundreds.
All these hundreds of other women.
No, that's true. I would just say...
I just think it's funny that you're downplaying it because, you know, you're married now.
It does feel like you're still spinning, man. Like you're still, no, I was a totally above the board, did everything right mission experience.
Well, okay. So I am spinning because I did write her more than anyone else in terms of people inside of my mission. I did like her probably more than other people, but it's hard for me to know where things started.
Turning into
what they became, because now it's all just retrospect. And I will say I did keep in touch with a few other people. And at the time, with my wife, I was trying to contain it as a friendship, and I think she was too. And I think I was with a lot of people, you know, she wasn't the only girl I knew or that I was attracted to. And there were a lot of, friendships like that where I wasn't a toe-the-line sort of keep-the-rules-entirely sort of guy. But in all honesty, yeah, she probably got the most attention out of anyone that I was getting to know, if you will. But I never broke any of the, like, hardcore rules. I never, like, kissed her or, like, made out or did anything stupid like that.
But were you flirtatious in your letters or romantic in any way? Like, and I'll give you some context for this, because there was a missionary that I worked with that fell in love with one of his English students, and he would write her these letters, and eventually they were discovered and other people got a chance to read them besides just this girl that he was writing them to. And there was stuff in there that was totally inappropriate for a missionary. You know, I thought so. So is that what you were doing, you know,
no,
in a way?
No. So
you didn't invite her to come back to the US and what kind of a life you guys could have together?
Nope. None of that.
Okay.
So we kept it pretty, both of us, like any sort of pushing the envelope we did was like really hardly anything. It was more of a friendship that was developing into something through most of it. It wasn't romantic. I mean, flirtatious maybe, but not like in the sense that you write a woman differently than you write a man when you're both single. Right. But it's not like, romantically involved, or, you know, there's that fine line. And I was pretty good at doing the mental gymnastics at the time of, you know, not going too far on the other side, but riding the line in terms of I shouldn't be riding her, but I am, but I'm not doing it in an excessive or over the top sort of inappropriate way is how I would justify it.
Did you try to hide it? You know, like when you would get letters from her, your companions would see that you were getting letters from her?
No, they all knew. But remember, like, I would get a letter from her every few weeks or something. Yeah. And, like, I would get letters from my family every week. So it's not like it was an excessive, like, here's the pile from this girl I knew. And then here's my family pile, which is one-fifth the size. You know, it wasn't like that. It was just kind of mixed in with everything else.
Did she eventually convert, get baptized?
She did, yeah. She got baptized.
While you were out on a mission?
Uh-huh. And
so she went from having absolute zero interest to you leaving a few letters to her having a lot of interest.
Yeah, but it wasn't anything to do with me other – maybe ancillarily or something, but we didn't really get into gospel stuff in letters as much as, like, she would just tell me, like, I'm meeting with the missionaries more and more. It's interesting, and I'm learning more about your church. And it was less like bearing of testimonies in the letters, if that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, I just wondered if maybe she saw that as a necessity to continue in some sort of relationship with you. Do you think that's the case?
No, I don't think so at all. She converted in her own time and style. Like it had, in my opinion, and I really should just defer to her, it had everything to do with the missionaries and the timing and the place at the time in her life that it all came together. My involvement can't be written out of the story, but as far as the actual conversion, it's pretty minimal.
But it happened while you were still out in the field.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I didn't go to her baptism. I was, like, super far away on the other side of the country. But this is where it gets more interesting or boring, however you want to look at it. At the end of my mission, which is generally unprecedented, which, again, Glenn, if you're keeping score, this is another thing that made me feel special. Mm-hmm. I got to serve in the same city a second time. So I first served in my wife's city. I first served there when I was kind of a new missionary, and I had only been a few months in the country. And then the last 2 months of my mission after I got out of the office, I went back there and I was my wife's branch president. So that was just for 2 months where I was running that branch, and she had a couple callings. I mean, as did everyone, because we were only a branch.
Were you riding the whole time up to this point?
On and off. Sometimes more than others. Sometimes we would write every week or two, and other times a month or two would go by. So I have all the letters, and I'd have to, like, dig them all up, but it's probably – because it's the beginning of my mission to the end of my mission is probably about, less than a dozen letters total. So I don't know if that helps provide context or whatever.
So, like, the romantic stuff, did that develop after the mission was over and you had moved back to the U.S.? Or was there a little bit of it developing in that last 2 months when she would confess all of her sins to you?
Well, she never did that. Yeah. We never had any of those kind of interviews, for what it's worth. So I knew that it was going, and I think she did too. The last 2 months, we had feelings for each other, but we were, like, above the board, made sure people were in the same room together. You know, we didn't go off and do things on our own. We never got close physically. I was trying to be a good missionary, and I was her freaking branch president, and you
right.
imagine the cycles going through my head on that.
Yeah.
Where I'm sort of falling for somebody, but I'm a missionary with my heart supposedly locked, but then I'm also running this branch. It's supposed to be a stalwart, you know, priesthood leader or whatever. But we did start in not a bunch, but since we're getting into these details, I mean, she was in my branch, so I could talk to her on the phone, which I never did before. So we talked on the phone a few times in an alone type of environment, because that's just how the phone works, right? My companion's still in the room, but mostly it would just be to sync up on churchy stuff and activities and coordinating. And we did plan ward activities together, but we were always just together with everyone else, and no one thought anything of it. And incidentally, there was another missionary who kind of had a girlfriend for a while, and that didn't turn out so well. So obviously I had plenty of pressure to not let this get out of control or anything. So I feel like a lot of time on this topic, but basically,
I've got more questions. Yeah. I'm just waiting for you to take a breath.
All right, go. Tell me more.
Well, you mentioned the cycles that went through your mind as a missionary and a branch president here. I want you to speak more about that. And I'm curious if you ever really prayed to God to help you with these struggles, you know, or if you felt like it was inappropriate and you needed that, you know?
So we're talking about two different things. And let me explain. As far as praying to God to help me through struggles with her specifically,
yeah,
I didn't do that. And the reason is because I compartmentalized my relationship with her, and I gave her like extra, okay, you can edit this in whatever way makes sense, but here's what I'm trying to say. I gave her extra respect. I kept her out of my mind in like a physical way and in an emotional way. Like I was overcompensating because I was learning about her more in a churchy sort of way. I was learning about her in a intellectual way. I was finding that I was interested in her, but I did not struggle with, you know,
fantasizing and stuff, right?
Yeah, fantasizing. Yeah. Now, did I struggle with fantasizing about women in general? Of course, like every missionary did, but I separated the two. That did not involve her, and that was, like, again, my cycles and my brain functionality doing its thing, because that's the way, you know, missionaries each have their own way of those things working out, I guess.
See, I'm just imagining if I was in your position, I would probably be thinking, this is somebody that I'd like to marry. You know, this is somebody that I'd like to have a future with, and I don't want any of my natural man as an enemy of God weaknesses to submarine that. And so those are the sorts of things that I would be praying for. So I think I would be overcompensating the way you're describing overcompensating, but I think I probably would have taken it into prayer and that sort of thing. But maybe you weren't as aware of your desire for a future with her as I'm.
I was and I wasn't. Like I hadn't taken it all the way to a marriage point of view, but I knew that I wanted to get to know her better. I knew that I wanted to stay in touch. I knew that I wanted to this relationship to progress beyond what it was. But I was in the last 2 months of my mission, and you know, she was applying for schools at this time. And she was predominantly applying to schools in Australia and England and places that were more interesting to her than the United States. So I did suggest, you know, you should consider applying to Brigham Young University. And bear in mind, she's a member of the church now, and you get all those benefits, which we don't need to get into. And, you know, she had a pretty good track record with school and stuff, so maybe she could get a scholarship. And she sort of was like, yeah, maybe, I don't know, I'm applying to all this other stuff. But long story short, after my mission, I did go back to Bulgaria a year later. And in the interim, she did apply to BYU along with a bunch of other schools. And she did get an offer with a scholarship to BYU. And then she ended up coming to the States a year or so after I came home from my mission. And
Let me get this time frame. You come home.
Okay.
You're here. You're home for a year. You go back to Bulgaria.
Actually, I was only home for like 9 months, and then I went back to Bulgaria.
Just to visit.
Yep.
And you visit specifically her?
And my aunt, who, that's a whole other story, but who I tried to convert as a missionary because that didn't work out. But I have family in Bulgaria, so but yes, it was mostly to visit her.
Yeah, thanks, man. Let's get to
Let's cut to the chase.
And then soon after that, she is accepted to BYU, and then she moves down to Utah, and mm-hmm. bing, bang, boom, the rest is history.
Yep, and then we dated for about 4 months, 5 months, got engaged, got married another 5 months later. So from her getting to Utah and us getting married, I think was – it was less than a year from her coming to Utah and us getting married. And
so do you feel judged or feel like you have to apologize for marrying a girl from your mission?
Oh, wait a second. I got that wrong. It's a year. I came home November 2000 and we got married August 2002. So it was a year and a half, almost 2 years before we got married since I got home. Anyway,
that
what
sounds
was
like a yes.
Yes. Do I feel judged for marrying somebody from my mission?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, this is part of my Mormonism that probably is showing through. I can't even get rid of. It's not a big deal. I didn't even break the rules well, I did break the rules, but not in the way that people normally associate breaking the rules with a woman on a mission, you know. I finished my mission honorably. I did all the things that I thought were good. I don't know why I care so much to, like, clarify and justify and ring fence all this stuff, but that's just the way it is. That's just how my nature is still to protect this story of mine. And even to this day, like, this is the good version. You guys are hearing me, like, opening up about this, which is probably sounds bizarre because, you know, if you're listening to this, it probably sounds like I'm skirting around a lot of things. But my wife and I, we would make up stories and not make up necessarily as much as just, like, tell the story in a certain way that it would serve our purpose for, like, the first 5 years of our marriage, just because it was almost like we were embarrassed or we didn't know how to deal with it or we didn't want to get the comment of, like, uh-huh, you met on your mission. Uh-huh, did you come home? Uh-huh. And we're like, yeah, we haven't heard that joke before.
Well, what do you mean? What, like, what stories would you come up with?
Well, we would just say things like, we met at BYU and got engaged soon thereafter. Because we did meet at BYU, but we re-met there. So it's only a white lie, you know. Or, like, did you know her on your mission? Oh, she lived in Bulgaria. She's Bulgarian. Yeah, did you know her on her mission? Yeah, but I didn't convert her. is the other missionary. I would just, like, cut to the questions that people would be most interested in. And then if they didn't know the full context, then they would just move on and be like, oh, that's kind of cool. Okay. But if I tell it the way I told it today, then, of course, there's a bazillion follow-up questions. And I feel like I have to, in Mormon culture, ring fence it.
Well, and I think it's more of a second half of the century Mormon culture thing, just because in my family history, my grandparents met on a mission.
Mine as well.
And he, you know, like my grandfather wasn't shy at all about saying that they stole kisses in the safe of the mission home.
Oh, you know,
and it was something that I would hear and go, wow, you know, you're not supposed to do that. But I just wonder, I don't know for sure, I just wonder if it was a different mindset back then and that we're just a little more concerned about, you know, there have been more rules.
Well, the lock your heart thing is huge.
Yeah, but when would that have been? Like 1970, 1960?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, last 20, 40, 30, 30 years, say 30, 40 years. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. And my grandparents met as well on the mission, but my grandmother did kind of pull the bob and was constantly trying to downplay that fact. So,
right. And it's funny. I downplay it more with people who are familiar with the church, because if I tell the story, again, leaving out key components to people who are not affiliated with Mormonism, they like don't know any different. They're like, oh, whatever. Okay.
Yeah, because for anybody else, you were like 20, 21-year-old people who met while you were over there doing a service project or something. What's strange about that?
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be more strange that you didn't act on anything.
Right, yeah, if anything. What took you so long?
Yeah. So despite, and you're currently not a, not really a believer, is that fair?
Yeah, that's right. I'm not really a believer.
And yet still love your mission and don't regret doing it.
Absolutely, yeah. For two reasons primarily. One is I can't think of my world, I can't think of my life without my wife, and it's just one of those things that's the way it turned out, and I love my mission for that. That's what one thing it gave me. And then the other reason is we already covered it, is just my coming of age, learning how to deal with people, learning what I want to do with my life, and becoming who I really am. I don't know that I would have come out of my shell proverbially through whatever would have replaced my mission, but I don't know what that would have been, and I don't know that it would have been as effective. So, yeah.
Well, so, okay, this is a complete false question. I'm gonna ask it anyway. So, assuming you would otherwise have met your wife at BYU, gotten married, and she would have still been a part of your life, if you had to do it over again, do you think you would put in for a mission again?
Yeah, I'd still say yes. And believe me, this is something that I'm sort of mess with in my head sometimes, because, you know, when we have kids, and this is just a framework that helps explain what I'm about to say. When we have kids, if we have a son and he has to go on a mission, I don't want him to go on a mission. I don't want him to participate in the church, but I don't know what the replacement was. The idea of and this isn't exclusive to Mormonism. It just so happened to work for me very well at the time and the place. But the idea of a young man going off on his own, doing something good for other people, perceived good or reality good, you decide based on how much your mission was really helping people. But leaving that aside, a young boy learning how to serve others and live on his own and get along with new people and get out of his shell, if there's some way to provide that outside of the Mormon mission context, I'm all for it. I haven't really looked into it, but it worked out pretty well for me.
Isn't that just college?
No.
No? That's not what happens to people college when they go away to college and they learn how to be themselves outside of a Mormon context?
I'm going to give you a Tom sigh.
Sorry. Well, I'm not saying that college is like a cult and you need some kind of cult-like relationship.
I was taking it a different way. I was just saying I don't think college is that way because it's more free-spirited. People are like smoking pot and, you know.
All of them?
Not all of them, but that's what people associate with coming out of, you know, figuring out who they are and going to college.
If somebody goes to college and they join a fraternity, whether they smoke pot and drink beer all the time or not, isn't that a similar experience to being on a mission? I mean, they're not like holier than thou. They're not serving, you know.
Yeah, that's why it's totally different. They're doing all those things for their own benefit. And while you get that subconsciously as a missionary, you really believe that you are putting aside your life to think of others first. You're learning how to deal with people. You're trying to convince them of something. You're learning all sorts of skills that don't matter when you're in a fraternity getting drunk on a couch with somebody showing you her boobies. You know, that's just not the same experience to me.
Man, I wish I would have had that college experience. That was very different than.
You can edit that out. I don't know what I was. I think the mission experience is still unique and beneficial in a way that it's hard for me to characterize because there's a lot of indoctrination and negative aspects to it that
that you're really doing good for, you know, I mean, that you're really giving the message that God wants people to, it seems like you're holding that up as a value on the one hand, and you don't want to ascribe that to college, that the education that people are getting there.
So
it's that you refer to what you're doing as service, as if you're somehow really serving other people when it's converting, when it's recruiting.
It's cultural imperialism.
It is, absolutely, especially in the foreign context like that. Yeah,
you guys are right, but I need to tell you one quick thing about my mission story that might help shed some light on this. So, like most missions, my mission had a community service rule where you could only give a certain amount per week, and the rest had to be proselyting. And I think ours was like 4 or 6 hours, some, you know, pitiful amount of time that you could actually help people. I actually petitioned and spent some of my own money and designed a computer class off of the idea of the English classes that the mission was already doing. Got permission from my mission president retroactively because I didn't want to wait. And started teaching computer classes along with English classes and also opened a soup kitchen. And I ended up breaking that rule like times 3 or 4. And it really mattered to me because on the one hand, I was breaking a rule. But on the other hand, I felt like I was doing more as a missionary than I otherwise could do as a proselyting missionary. So those are types of things that maybe aren't typical, and I have this weird thing with breaking some rules and not others and really feeling bad about that. Well, the breaking of certain rules is way worse than others, and I compartmentalize things, but my mission really helped me try to solve problems for other people in a way that college never did. The end. Amen.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you did say you don't want your son to go on a mission.
No, I don't want my son to join a fraternity either, to be honest. I that's what I'm saying is I don't know the acceptable – I can't think of the right replacement. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but I'm hoping I can convince my son is not going on a mission. That's just not going to happen, and he doesn't have any interest in it. I got a 13-year-old. But I'm hoping something, either a six-month Peace Corps, a three-month
– There you go. Yeah.
Something. I'm hoping – we haven't looked into it either. I'm hoping there's something that can replace it because I reluctantly echo everything you said.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a hard cognitive dissonance sort of thing for me, is the fact that my mission is where I was indoctrinated, you know, the most, but at the same time, it's where I learned about myself the most. And it's just kind of reconciling those two things and meeting my wife and all that put together. I would say the happy it happened more than it didn't wins the day, but it's definitely, you know, pros and cons list.
And you're definitely kind of playing roulette, because if my son was to get to another mission with another mission president with another group of guys with, you know, his experiences could be ultimately damaging.
Well, but you know that the Lord's going to put him where he needs to be for his best growth and development.
Of course.
Right, right.
Why are you laughing at me?
No reason. Okay. You'll find out when you're older. Right.
So if I had to summarize your mission, it was... Went to your sister's mission, was taught by your mom, saw a bunch of naked missionaries, put your hands in their butts when they put theirs in yours, met a woman, and got married. That sounds awesome, dude.
Wow. Okay. That the butt hand insertion section really does not deserve that level of visibility in that progression. But sure, yeah, that was my mission.
Nice. I just like when you can break it down real simply, you know, and provide a nice little overview of this was Bob's mission.
Yeah, one thing that I learned on my mission that other missionaries don't necessarily learn that I wanted to say really quickly was that I thought I knew the culture. I thought I knew Bulgarians. I thought I connected with them. I thought, you know, living there for 2 years and learning their language made me unique in some way. And the truth is that missionaries don't know shit.
So wait. So you're going to be like,
I am Africa. I am Africa. With the strength of the cheetah, my native voice will ring.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. That was stupid. But when you saw that We Are Africa thing, and it is the missionaries up on stage that are like, we are Africa, we're everything about Africa. Like, Africans are Africans, but we are Africa.
Right.
That's how you felt after your mission? Like, you had learned so much about the Bulgarian people that you were almost more than they were?
Yeah, somehow, like, it gives you the right to know a people, to know somebody, to know a culture, because you spent 2 years being a part of it. And it definitely
helps. Sort of.
Helps.
I mean, it's kind of tangentially involved with it.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, is it definitely helps build your credibility towards knowing things about that country and culture. But, you know, after having lived the next 12 years of my life very close to that culture in other ways, I still don't understand it. I still don't fully get it. And I get it way more than probably most missionaries, but way less than they ever thought that they got it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think it does. Well, thanks, Bob. That was Bulgaria between 98 and 2000.
That's right.
All right.
There's more Bob between 98 and 2000, but yeah.
All right. Who wants to give the closing prayer?
Forward ever, don't you serve us?